The next morning they left their rudimentary camp and started upwards while it was still dark. Somehow, Taita was able to place his feet on a path that even Nefer's young eyes could not discern. Each of them carried a heavy coil of rope, plaited from linen and horsehair, and used to tether the horses. They'd also brought one of the small water skins. Taita had warned that it would be hot on the pinnacle once the sun reached its height. By the time they'd worked their way round to the far side of the eastern pinnacle, the light had strengthened, and they could see the face above them. Taita spent an hour surveying the route up to it. At last he was satisfied. "In the name of great Horus, the All-Powerful, let us begin," he said, and made the sign of the god's wounded eye. Then he led Nefer back to the point he had chosen from which to begin the ascent. "I'll lead the way," he told the boy as he knotted one end of the rope around his waist. "Pay out the rope as I go. Watch what I do, and when I call you, tie it to yourself and follow me. If you slip, I'll hold you." At first, Nefer climbed cautiously, following the route that Taita had taken, his expression set and his knuckles white with tension as he fastened on each hold. Taita murmured encouragement from above, and the boy's confidence grew with each move upwards. He reached Taita's side and grinned at him. "That was easy." "It will grow harder," Taita assured him dryly, and led up to the next pitch of rock. This time Nefer was scampering behind him like a monkey, chattering with excitement and enjoyment. They stood below a chimney in the rock face that tapered near the top into a narrow crack. "This is like the climb you will have to make down to the nest when we reach the top. Watch how I wedge my hands and feet into the crack." Taita stepped up into the chimney and went up slowly but without pause. When the chimney narrowed, he kept on steadily like a man climbing a ladder. His kilts flapped about his skinny old legs, and Nefer could see under the linen to the grotesque scar where his manhood had been cut away. Nefer had seen it before and grown so accustomed to it that the terrible mutilation no longer appalled him. Taita called to him from above, and this time Nefer danced up the rock, falling naturally into the rhythm of the ascent.
"Why should it not be so?"
Taita tried to keep his pride within reasonable bounds.
"In his veins runs the blood of warriors and great athletes."
Then he smiled, and his eyes sparkled as though he were young again.
"And he has had me to teach him. Of course he excels."
The sun was only halfway up the sky when at last they stood together on the summit of the eastern peak.
"We'll rest a while here."
Taita took the wineskin from his shoulder and sank down.
"I'm not tired, Tata."
"Nevertheless, we will rest."
Taita passed him the skin and watched as he gulped down a dozen mouthfuls.
"The descent to the nest will be more difficult," he said when Nefer stopped for breath. "There'll be nobody to show you the way. And there is one place where you cannot see your feet when the rock leans away from you."
"I'll be all right, Tata."
"If the gods allow," Tata agreed, and turned away his head as if to admire the glory of mountain, sea, and desert spread out below them. But in fact, so that the boy could not see his lips move as he prayed, "Spread your wings over him, mighty Horus. For this is the one you have chosen. Cherish him, my mistress Lostris, who has become a goddess. For this is the fruit of your womb and the blood of your blood. Turn your hand from him, foul Seth, and touch him not, for you cannot prevail against those who protect this child."
He sighed as he reconsidered the wisdom of challenging the god of darkness and chaos, then softened his admonition with a small bribe. "Pass him by, good Seth, and I will sacrifice an ox to you in your temple at Abydos when next I pass that way." He stood up. "It is time to make the attempt." He led the way across the summit, and stood on the far lip, looking down at the campsite and the grazing horses, which were rendered tiny as newborn mice by the drop. The female falcon was in flight, circling out over the gorge. He thought there was something unusual in her behaviour, particularly when she uttered a strange, forlorn cry, such as he'd never heard before from a royal falcon. There was no sign of her mate, though he searched the heavens for him. Then he lowered his eyes and looked across the abyss at the main peak of the mountain and the ledge on which they had stood the previous day. This enabled him to orientate himself, for the bulge of the rock under him hid the rest from sight. He moved slowly along the lip until he found the beginning of the crack, which he recognized as the one that ran down and opened into the cleft in which the falcons had built their nest. He picked up a loose pebble and dropped it over the edge. It clattered as it dropped down the wall and out of sight. He hoped that it might alarm the tiercel off the nest and so confirm its exact position, but there was still no sign of it. Only the female bird continued her aimless circles and uttered her strange, lonely cries. Taita called Nefer to him and tied the end of the rope around his waist. He checked the knot carefully, and then, an inch at a time, drew the full length of the rope through his fingers, checking for any frayed or weakened spot. "You have the saddlebag to carry the fledgling." He checked the knot with which Nefer had secured it over his shoulder so that it would not hamper his movements on the climb.
"Stop fussing so, Tata. My father said that sometimes you're like an old woman."
"Your father should show more respect. I wiped his arse when he was a mewling infant, just as I wiped yours." Tata sniffed and again checked the knot at the boy's waist, delaying the fateful moment.
But Nefer walked to the edge and stood straight-backed above the drop without any sign of hesitation.
"Are you ready?"
He looked over his shoulder and smiled with a flash of white teeth and a sparkle of his dark green eyes. Those eyes reminded Taita so vividly of Queen Lostris. With a pang, he thought Nefer even more comely than his father had been at the same age.
"We cannot dally here all day."
Nefer uttered one of his father's favourite expressions in lordly tones, aping the royal manner faithfully. Taita sat down and wriggled into a position in which he could anchor his heels in the crack and lean back to brace himself against the rope over his shoulder. He nodded at Nefer and saw the cocky grin leave the boy's face as he edged down over the drop. He paid out the rope as Nefer worked his way down. Nefer reached the bulge in the wall, and, hanging on grimly with both hands, let his legs down to grope for a foothold beneath the overhang. He found the crack with his toes and thrust his bare foot into it, twisting his ankle to lock the hold, then slithered down. He glanced up one last time at Taita, tried to smile, but made a sickly grimace, then swung round the overhang. Before he could find another hold, he felt his foot slip in the crack, and he started to swivel on the rope. If he lost his footing, he would pivot and swing out helplessly over the drop. He doubted that the old man above would have the strength to haul him back. He snatched desperately at the crack, and his fingers hooked on, steadying him. He lunged with his other hand and grabbed the next hold. He was round the bulge, but his heart was hammering and his breath hissed in his throat.
"Are you all right?"
Tater's voice came down to him.
"All right,"
he gasped. He looked down between his knees and saw the crack in the rock widen into the top of the cleft above the nest. His arms were tiring and beginning to shake. He stretched his right leg down and found another foothold. Taita was right. It was more difficult to descend than to climb upwards. When he moved his right hand down, he saw that already his knuckle was raw, and he left a small bloody smear on the rock. Inching down, he reached the point where the crack opened into the main cleft. Again he was forced to reach round the lip and find a hidden hold. Yesterday, when he and Taita had discussed it, sitting together on the other side of the gulf, this transition point had looked so easy. But now both his feet were swinging out freely over the lip of the cleft, and the abyss seemed to suck at him like some monstrous mouth. He moaned and hung on with both hands, freezing to the rock face. He was afraid now, the last vestige of courage blown away on the gusts of hot wind that tugged at him, threatening to tear him from the cliff. He looked down and tears mingled with the sweat on his cheeks. The drop beckoned, pulled at him with claws of terror, sickening him to the guts. Move! Taita's voice drifted down to him, faint but filled with urgency. You must keep moving! With a huge effort, Nefer rallied himself for another effort. His bare toes groped under him, and he found a ledge that seemed wide enough to give him purchase. He lowered himself on aching, juddering arms. Abruptly his foot slipped from the ledge, and his arms were too tired to support his weight any longer. He fell and screamed as he went. He dropped only the span of his two arms, and then the rope bit cruelly into his flesh, binding up under his ribs and choking the breath out of him. He came up short and dangling out into space, held only by the rope and the old man above him.
Nefer, can you hear me?
Taita's voice was rough with the strain of holding him. The boy whimpered like a puppy.
You must catch a hold. You cannot hang there.
Taita's voice calmed him. He blinked the tears out of his eyes and saw the rock only an arm's length from his face.
Let's on!
Taita goaded him, and Nefer saw that he was hanging opposite the cleft. The opening was deep enough to accommodate him, the sloping ledge wide enough for him to stand on, if only he could reach it. He stretched out a shaking hand and touched the wall with his fingertips. He started to swing himself back towards it. It seemed like an eternity of struggle and heart-breaking effort, but at last he swung into the opening and managed to place both bare feet on the ledge and to crouch doubled over in the opening. He wedged himself there, panting and gasping for air. Above him, Taita felt his weight go off the rope and called down encouragement.
Bakir! Bakir, Nefer! Where are you?
I'm in the cleft above the nest.
What can you see?
Taita wanted to keep the boy's mind fixed on other things so that he would not dwell on the void beneath his feet. Nefer wiped the sweat from his eyes with the back of his hand and peered down.
I could see the edge of the nest.
How far?
Close.
Can you reach it?
I'll try.
Nefer braced his bowed back against the roof of the narrow cleft and shuffled slowly down the sloping floor. Below him he could just make out the dried twigs that protruded from the nest site. As he went down further, his view into the nest opened slowly an inch at a time. The next time he called out, his voice was stronger and excited.
I can see the Tearsil. He's still on the nest.
What's he doing?
Taita shouted back.
He's crouching down. It seems as though he's sleeping.
Nefer's voice was puzzled.
I can only see his back.
The male bird was motionless, lying on the high side of the untidy nest. But how could he be sleeping and unaware during the commotion above him, Nefer wondered. His own fear was forgotten now in the excitement of having the falcon so close and the nest almost within touching distance. He moved faster, more confidently, as the floor of the cleft levelled out under his feet and was more headroom for him to stand erect.
I can see his head.
The Tearsil was stretched out with his wings spread as though mantling a kill.
He is beautiful, Nefer thought. And I almost close enough to touch him, yet he still shows no fear.
Suddenly he realized he could seize the sleeping bird. He braced himself for the effort, wedged his shoulder into the cleft, his bare feet in a secure stance above him. Slowly he leant out towards the Tearsil, then stopped with his hand poised above it. There were tiny droplets of blood on the russet back feathers. Bright as polished rubies, they twinkled in the sunlight, and with a sudden swooping sensation in the pit of his stomach, Nefer realized that the Tearsil was dead. He was overcome with a dreadful sense of loss, as though something of great value to him had been taken away forever. It seemed more than just the death of the falcon. The royal bird represented something more. It was the symbol of a god and a king,
As he stared at it, the carcass of the Tearsal seemed to be transformed into the dead body of Pharaoh himself. Sob choked Nefer, and he jerked away his hand. It moved only just in time. For then he heard a dry, rasping sound and an explosive hiss of air. Something huge and glittering black whipped out at where his hand had been the moment before and slammed into the mattress of dried twigs with such force that the whole nest shook. Nefer recoiled as far as the cramped space in the cleft would allow and stared at the grotesque creature that now swayed and wove before his face. His vision seemed sharpened and magnified. Time moved with the slow horror of nightmare. He saw the dead fledglings huddled in the cup of the nest beyond the carcass of the Tearsal. The thick, glittering coils of a gigantic black cobra twisted around them. The snake's head was raised, its hood, marked with a bold pattern of black and white, was spread. The slippery black tongue flickered out between the thin, grinning lips. Its eyes were fathomless black, each with a star of reflected light in the centre, as they held Nefer in a mesmeric stare. Nefer tried to scream a warning to Taita, but no sound came from his throat. He could not tear away his gaze from the cobra's dreadful stare. Its head swayed gently, but the massive coils that filled the falcon's nest to overflowing pulsed and clenched. Each polished scale was burnished like a jewel as they rasped against the twigs of the nest. Each coil was as thick as Nefer's arm, and slowly they revolved upon themselves. The head swayed back, the mouth gaped, and Nefer could see the pale lining of the throat. The almost transparent fangs came erect in the folds of soft membrane. There was a tiny bead of colourless venom on the tip of each bony needle. Then the wicked head flashed forward as the cobra struck at Nefer's face. Nefer screamed and hurled himself sideways, lost his balance and tumbled backward from the cleft. Even though Taito was braced to take any sudden weight on the rope, he was almost jerked from his stance on top of the cliff as Nefer's weight hit the line. A coil of the horsehair rope slid through his fingers, scorching the flesh, but he held hard. He could hear the boys screaming incoherently below him and felt him swinging at the end of the rope. Nefer pendulumed out from the cleft, then swung straight back towards the falcon's nest. The cobra had recovered swiftly from its abortive strike and was once more poised and erect. It fixed its gaze on the boy and swiveled its head to face him. At the same time, a harsh hiss erupted from its throat. Nefer screamed again and kicked out wildly at the snake as he flew straight towards it. Taita heard the terror in that scream and lay back on the rope, hauling until he felt his old muscles crack under the strain. The cobra struck instinctively at Nefer's eyes as he came within range. But at that instant, Taita's heave on the rope end jerked Nefer off line. The snake's gaping jaws passed a finger's width from his ear, and then, like the lash of a chariot whip, the heavy body flogged across his shoulder. Nefer screamed again, knowing he'd been fatally bitten. As he swung out once more over the open drop, he glanced down at the spot on his shoulder into which the serpent had sunk its fangs, and saw the pale yellow venom splashed across the thick leather fold of the saddlebag. With a wild lift of relief, he tore the bag free. As he started to swing back towards where the cobra still stood menacingly, he held the bag like a shield in front of him. The instant he was within range, the cobra struck again, but Nefer caught the blow on the thick leather folds of the bag. The beast's fangs snagged in the leather and held fast. As Nefer swung back, the snake was dragged with him. It was hauled cleanly out of the nest, a writhing, seething ball of coils and polished scales. It thrashed against Nefer's legs, the heavy tail lashing him, hissing fearsomely, clouds of venom spraying from its gaping jaws and dribbling down the leather bag. So great was its weight that Nefer's whole body was shaken violently. Almost without thought, Nefer hurled the leather bag away from him, the cobra's fangs still hooked into the leather. The bag and the snake dropped away together, the sinuous body still curling, coiling and whipping furiously. The penetrating hisses grew fainter as it plunged away down the cliff. It seemed to fall forever, until at last it struck the rocks far below. The impact did not kill or stun it, and it whipped about as it rolled down the scree slope, bouncing over the rocks like a huge black ball, until Nefer lost sight of it among the grey boulders. Through the mists of terror that clouded his mind, Taita's voice reached him. It was hoarse with effort and concern. "Speak to me! Can you hear me?"
I am here, Tata.
Nefer's voice was weak and shaky.
I'll pull you up.
Slowly, one heave at a time, Nefer was drawn upwards. Even in his distress, Nefer marvelled at the old man's strength. When the rock came within reach, he was able to take some of his weight off the rope, and it went quicker. At last he clawed his way round the overhang, and saw, with vast relief, Taita looking down at him from the summit, the ancient features, like those of a sphinx, riven into deep lines by his exertion on the ropes. With one last heave, Nefer tumbled over the top and fell into the old man's arms. He lay there, gasping and sobbing, unable to speak coherently. Taita hugged him. He too was shaking with emotion and exhaustion. Slowly, they calmed and regained their breath. Taita held the water skin to Nefer's lips, and he gulped, choked, and gulped again. Then he looked into Taita's face so abjectly that the old man hugged him closer.
It was horrible.
Nefer's words were barely intelligible.
It was in the nest. It had killed the falcons. All of them. Oh, Tata, it was terrible.
What was it, Nefer? Taita asked gently.
It killed my godbird and the Tearsal.
Gently, lad. Drink some more. He offered the water skin. Nefer choked again and was seized by a paroxysm of coughing. The moment he could speak again, he wheezed.
It tried to kill me also. It was huge and so black.
What was it, boy? Tell me clearly.
A cobra. A huge black cobra. In the nest, waiting for me. It had bitten the chicks and the falcon to death, and it went for me as soon as it saw me. I never imagined a cobra could grow so large.
Are you stricken? Taita demanded with dread, and hauled Nefer to his feet to examine him.
No, Tata. I used the bag as a shield. It never touched me.
Nefer protested, but Taita stripped off his kilt and made him stand naked while he went over his body looking for puncture wounds. One of his knuckles and both his knees were grazed, but otherwise the strong young body was marked only by the pharaonic cartouche on the smooth skin of his inner thigh. Taita had tattooed the design himself, and it was a miniature masterpiece that would forever endorse Nefer's claim to the double crown.
"Thanks be to the great God who protected you," Taita murmured.
"With this cobra apparition, Horus has sent you a portent of terrible events and dangers."
His face was grave and touched with the marks of grief and mourning. That was no natural serpent.
"Yes, Tata. I saw it close. It was enormous, but it was a real snake."
"Then how did it reach the nest site? Cobras cannot fly. And there's no other way to scale the cliff."
Nefer stared at him aghast.
"It killed my godbird,"
he whispered aloud.
"And it killed the royal Tearsal, Pharaoh's other self."
Taita agreed grimly, sorrow still in his eyes.
"There are mysteries here revealed. I saw their shadows in my vision, but they're confirmed by what has happened to you this day. This is a thing beyond the natural order."
"Explain it to me, Tata,"
Nefer insisted.
Taita handed him his kilt. "First, we must get down off this mountain and fly from the great dangers that beset us before I can consider the omens." He paused and looked at the sky as if in deep thought. Then he lowered his eyes and looked into Nefer's face.
"Put on your clothes," was all he said. As soon as Nefer was ready, Taita led him back to the far side of the summit and they began the descent. It went swiftly, for they had opened the route, and the urgency in every move Taita made was infectious. The horses were where they'd left them, but before they mounted, Nefer said,
The place where the cobra struck the rocks is but a short way from here.
He pointed to the head of the scree slope below the cliff on which the falcon's nest was still visible.
Let us search for the carcass. Perhaps if we find its remains, you could work some charm to destroy its powers.
It will be precious time wasted. There will be no carcass. Taita swung up onto the mare's back. Mount Nefer. The cobra has returned to the shadow places from which it sprang.
Nefer shivered with superstitious awe, then scrambled up onto the back of his colt. Neither of them spoke again until they were off the upper slopes and into the broken eastern foothills. Nefer knew well that when Taita was in this mood it was wasted effort to speak to him, but he urged his horse alongside and pointed out respectfully,
"Taita, this is not the way to Jebel Nagara."
"We're not going back there."
"Why not?"
"The Bedouin know that we were at the spring. They will tell those who search for us," Taita explained.
Nefer was puzzled.
"Who searches for us?"
Taita turned his head and looked at the boy with such pity that he was silenced. "I will explain when we're off this cursed mountain and in a safe place."
Taita avoided the crests of the hills where they might be silhouetted on the skyline, and wove a path through the gorges and valleys. Always he headed east, away from Egypt and the Nile, towards the sea. The sun was setting before he reined in his mare again and spoke.
"The main caravan road lies just beyond the next line of hills. We must cross it, but enemies may be watching for us there."
They left the horses tethered in a hidden wadi, with a few handfuls of crushed durra millet in their leather nose bags to keep them contented, then climbed cautiously to the crests of the hills and found a vantage point behind a bank of purple shale from which they could look down on the caravan road below.
"We will lie here until dark," Taita explained. "Then we will cross."
"I don't understand what you're doing, Tata. Why are we travelling east? Why don't we return to Thebes and to the protection of Pharaoh, my father?"
Taita sighed softly and closed his eyes.
"How do I tell him? I cannot hide it much longer. It is a child still, and I should shield him."
It was almost as if Nefer had read his thoughts, for he laid his hand on Taita's arm and said quietly,
"Today, on the mountain, I proved that I'm a man. Treat me as one."
Taita nodded. "Indeed, you proved it."
Before he went on, he swept another look along the well-beaten road below them, and immediately ducked his head.
"Someone coming," he warned.
Nefer flattened himself behind the shale bank, and they watched the column of dust come swiftly down the caravan road from the west. By this time the valley was in deep shadow and the sky was filled with all the glorious shades of the sunset.
"They're moving fast. Those are not merchants, they're fighting chariots," Nefer said. "Yes, I can see them now."
His bright young eyes had picked out the shape of the leading chariot, with the teamed horses trotting ahead of the charioteer on his high carriage.
"They're not Hyksos," he went on, as the shapes hardened and drew closer. "They're ours, a troop of 10 chariots. Yes, I see the pennant on the leading vehicle."
The fluttering pennant on the long, limber bamboo rod rode high above the rolling dust cloud.
"A cohort of the Bahat guards! We're safe, Tata!"
Nefer sprang to his feet and waved both hands over his head.
"Here!" he yelled. "Hear the blues! Here I am! I am Prince Nefer!"
Taita reached up with a bony hand and hauled him down violently.
"Get down, you little fool! Those are the minions of the cobra!"
He shot another quick glance over the bank and saw that the leading charioteer must have spotted Nefer on the skyline, for he'd whipped his team into a canter and was tearing up the road towards them.
"Come!" he told Nefer. "Hurry! They must not catch us!"
He dragged the boy off the ridge and started down the slope. After his initial reluctance, Nefer was spurred on by Taita's haste. He began to run in earnest, jumping from rock to rock, but he could not catch the old man. Taita's long, skinny legs flew, and the silver mane of his hair streamed out behind him. He reached the horses first, and was on the mare's bare back in a single leap.
"'I don't understand why we're running from our own people,' Nefer panted. "'What's happening, Tata? Mount! No time to talk! We must get clear!'
As they galloped out of the mouth of the wadi and into the open, Nefer shot a longing glance back over his shoulder. The leading chariot came soaring over the top of the ridge, and the driver let out a shout, but the distance and the rumble of the wheels muffled his voice. Earlier, Taita had led them through an area of broken volcanic rock through which no chariot would find a way. Now they rode for it, the horses running shoulder to shoulder and stride for stride.
"'If we can get among the rocks, we can lose them during the night.' There's only a whisper of daylight left.
Taita looked up at the last glow of the sun that had already sunk behind the western hills.
A single horseman can always hold off a chariot, Nefer declared, with a confidence he did not truly feel.
But when he looked back over his shoulder, he saw it was true. They were pulling away from the troop of bouncing, jolting vehicles. Before Nefer and Taita reached the broken ground, the chariots had dropped so far behind that they were almost obscured by their own dust cloud and by the gathering blue dusk. As soon as they reached the fringe of rocks, they were forced to bring the horses down to a cautious trot. But the footing was so dangerous and the light so bad that they were quickly reduced to a walk. In the last glimmer of the light, Taita looked back and saw the dark shape of the leading chariot of the squadron halted at the edge of the bad ground. He recognized the voice of the driver, who shouted after them, even though his words were faint.
"'Prince Nefer! Why do you flee? You need not fear us. We are the Bahat guards, come to escort you home to Thebes.'
Nefer made as if to turn his horse's head.
"'That is Hilto!' I know his voice so well. He's a good man. He's calling my name.
Hilto was a famous warrior who wore the gold of valour, but Taita ordered Nefer onward sternly.
Don't be deceived. Trust nobody.
Obediently, Nefer rode on into the wilderness of broken rock. The faint shouts behind them dwindled and were snuffed out by the eternal silence of the desert. Before they had gone much further, the darkness forced them to dismount and walk through the difficult places where the twisting path narrowed and sharp pillars of black stone might maim a careless horse or shatter the wheels of any vehicle that tried to follow them through. At last they had to stop to water and rest the horses. They sat close together, and with his dagger Taita sliced a loaf of Dorra bread, and they munched it as they talked softly.
"'Tell me of your vision, Tata. "'What did you really see when you worked the mazes of Amon-Ra?'
"'I told you, they were obscured.'
"'I know that's not true,'
Nefer shook his head.
"'You said that to protect me.'
"'He shivered from the chill of the night "'and from the sense of dread that had been his constant companion "'ever since that visitation of evil at the Falcon's Nest.'
You saw something of terrible portent. I know you did. That's why we're fleeing now. You must tell me your vision. I must understand what's happening to us.
Yes, you are right, Taita agreed at last. It is time for you to know.
He put out one thin arm and drew Nefer close under his shawl. The boy was surprised by the warmth of the old man's skinny frame. Taita seemed to be collecting his thoughts. And then at last he spoke.
In my vision, I saw a great tree growing on the banks of Mother Nile. It was a mighty tree, and its blooms were blue as hyacinths, and over it hung the double crown of the upper and lower kingdoms. In its shadow were all the multitudes of this very Egypt, men and women, children and greybeards, merchants and farmers and scribes and priests and warriors. The tree gave them all protection, and they prospered mightily and were content.
That was a good vision.
Eagerly, Nefer translated it the way Taita had taught him.
The tree must have been Pharaoh, my father. The colour of the house of Tamosa is blue, and my father wears the double crown.
That is the meaning as I read it.
Then what did you see, Tata?
I saw a serpent in the muddy waters of the river, swimming towards where the tree stood. It was a mighty serpent.
A cobra?
Nefer guessed, and his voice was small and fearful. Yes, Tater affirmed. It was a great cobra, and it crawled from the waters of the Nile and climbed into the tree, twisting itself around the trunk and the branches until it seemed part of the tree, supporting it and giving it strength.
That I do not understand,
Nefer whispered.
Then the cobra reared up above the uppermost branches of the tree, struck down, and buried its fangs in the trunk.
Satorus,
Nefer shuddered.
Was it the same snake that tried to bite me, do you think?
He did not wait for an answer, but went on quickly.
What did you see then, Tata?
I saw the tree wither, fall, and shatter. I saw the cobra still reared triumphantly on high. But now it wore on its evil brow the double crown. The dead tree began to throw out green shoots, but as they appeared, the serpent struck at them, and they too were poisoned and died. Nefer was silent. Although the meaning seemed evident, he was unable to voice his interpretation of the vision.
Were all the green shoots of the tree destroyed?
He asked eventually.
There was one that grew in secret, beneath the surface of the earth, until it was strong. Then it burst out like a mighty vine and locked itself in conflict with the cobra. Although the cobra attacked it with all its strength and venom, still it survived and had a life of its own.
What was the end of the conflict, Tata? Which of them triumphed? Which one wore the double crown in the end?
I did not see the end of the conflict, because it was obscured in the smoke and dust of war. Nefer was silent for so long that Taita thought he'd fallen asleep. But then the boy began to shake, and he realized he was weeping. At last Nefer spoke with a dreadful finality and certainty.
Pharaoh is dead. My father is dead. That was the message of your vision. The poison tree was Pharaoh. That was the same message at the falcon's nest. The dead Tearsal was Pharaoh. My father is dead. Killed by the cobra.
Taita could not answer him. All he could do was tighten his grip around Nefer's shoulders and try to impart strength and comfort to him.
And I'm the green shoot of the tree,
Nefer went on.
You saw this. You know that the cobra is waiting to destroy me as he did my father. That's why you would not let the soldiers take me back to Thebes. You know that the cobra waits for me there.
You are right, Nefer. He cannot return to Thebes until you are strong enough to defend yourself. We must fly from this very Egypt.
There are lands and mighty kings to the east. It is my purpose to go to them and seek an ally to help us destroy the cobra.
But who is the cobra? Did you not see his face in the vision?
We know that he stands close to your father's throne. For in the vision he was entwined with the tree and gave it support.
He paused, and then, as if making a decision, went on. Naja is the name of the cobra. Nefer stared at him.
Naja,
he whispered.
Naja. Now, I understand why we cannot return to Thebes.
He paused for a while, then said,
wandering in the eastern lands, we'll become two outcasts. Beggars.
The vision showed me that you will grow strong. We must put our trust in the mazes of Amon-Ra.
Despite his grief for his father, Nefer slept at last. But Taita roused him in the darkness before dawn. They mounted again and rode eastward until the bad ground fell away behind them, and Nefer thought he smelt the salt of the sea on the dawn wind.
"At the port of Seged, we'll find a ship to take us across to the land of the Hurrians."
Taita seemed to read what was in his mind.
"King Sargon of Babylon and Assyria, those mighty kingdoms between the Tigris and the Euphrates, is your father's satrap. He is bound in treaty to your father against the Hyksos and all our mutual enemies. I think that Sargon will hold to that treaty, for he is an honorable man. We must trust that he will take us in and foster your claim to the throne of united Egypt."
Ahead of them the sun came up in a furnace glow, and when they topped the next rise they saw the sea below them, blazing like a freshly forged bronze war shield. Taita judged the distance.
"We will reach the coast before the sun sets this evening."
Then, with narrowed eyes, he turned to look back over his mount's rump. He stiffened as he made out not one but four separate plumes of yellow dust rising on the plain behind them.
"Hilto again!" he exclaimed. "I should have known better than to think that that old rogue would give up the chase so readily."
He jumped up and stood erect on his horse's back for a better field of view, an old cavalryman's trick. He must have detoured round the rocky ground in the night. Now he's thrown out a ring of chariots in an extended line to sweep for our tracks. He did not need a necromancer to tell him he must be heading east for the coast. Swiftly he looked in every direction for cover. Although the open stony plain over which they were travelling seemed devoid of any feature, he picked out an insignificant fold of the ground that might offer concealment if they could reach it in time.
"Dismount," he ordered Nefer. "We must keep as low as possible and raise no dust for them to spot us."
Silently he rebuked himself for not having taken more care to cover their tracks during the night. Now, as they turned aside and led the horses towards the concealing fold of the ground, he took care to avoid the patches of soft earth and keep to a natural rock pavement which would leave no tracks. When they reached the hidden ground, they found it was too shallow to cover a standing horse. Nefer looked back anxiously. The nearest column of moving dust was less than half a league behind them and coming on fast. The others were spread out in a wide semicircle.
"There's no place to hide here, but it's too late to run now. Already they have us surrounded."
Taita slipped down from the back of his mare, spoke to her softly, and stooped to caress her front legs. The mare stamped and snorted, but when he insisted, she lowered herself reluctantly and lay flat on her side, still snorting in mild protest. Taita took off his kilt and used it to blindfold her so that she would not attempt to stand up again. Then he came quickly to Nefer's colt and performed the same trick. When both horses were down, he told Nefer sharply, "Lie at Stargazer's head and hold him down if he tries to stand." Nefer laughed for the first time since he had learned of his father's death. Taita's way with animals never failed to enchant him.
"How did you make them do that, Tata?"
"If you speak to them so that they understand, they will do whatever you tell them. Now lie beside him and keep him quiet." They lay behind the horses and watched the encircling columns of dust sweep across the plain around them.
"They won't be able to pick out our tracks on the stony ground, will they, Tata?"
Nefer asked hopefully. Taita grunted. He was watching the approach of the nearest chariot. In the dancing mirage it seemed insubstantial, wavering and distorted as an image seen through water. It was moving quite slowly, weaving from side to side as it cast for spoor. Suddenly it moved forward with more determination and purpose, and Taita could see that the charioteer had picked up their tracks and was following them. The chariot came on until they could make out the men on the footplate more clearly. They were leaning out over the dashboard, examining the earth as they passed over it. Suddenly Taita muttered unhappily,
"By Seth's stinking breath, they have a Nubian scout with them!"
The tall man was made even taller by the headdress of heron's feathers he wore. 500 cubits from where they lay concealed, the Nubian jumped down from the moving vehicle and ran ahead of the horses.
"They're at the spot where we turned aside," Taita whispered. "Horus conceal our spoor from that black savage."
It was said that Nubian scouts could follow the track left by a swallow flying through the air. The Nubian brought the chariot to a halt with a peremptory hand signal. He'd lost the tracks where they turned onto the stony ground. Bent almost double, he circled out over the bare earth. At a distance, he looked like a secretary bird hunting for serpents and rodents.
"Can you not weave a spell of concealment for us, Tata?"
Nefer whispered uneasily. Taita had worked the spell for them often, when they were hunting gazelle out on the open plains, and most times had enticed the dainty little animals with an easy bowshot without them becoming aware of the hunters. Taita did not reply, but when Nefer glanced across to where he lay, he saw that the old man already had his most potent charm in his hand, a golden five-pointed star of exquisite workmanship, the Periapt of Lostris. Nefer knew that sealed within was a lock of hair Taita had snipped from the head of Queen Lostris as she lay on the embalmer's table before her deification. Taita touched it to his lips as he silently recited the canticle for concealment from the eyes of an enemy. Out on the plain, the Nubian straightened with a fresh air of purpose and gazed straight in their direction.
"He's found the twist in our tracks," Nefer said as they watched the chariot pull in behind him,
and the Nubian started towards them over the rocky ground. Taita said softly,
"I know that devil well. His name is Bay, and he's a shaman of the Usbak tribe."
Nefer watched in trepidation as the chariot and its outrider came on steadily. The charioteer was standing high on the footplate. Surely he could look down on them from there. But he gave no sign of having spotted them. Closer still they came, and Nefer recognized Hilto as the charioteer, even down to the white battle scar on his right cheek. For a moment it seemed he stared straight at Nefer with those hawk-sharp eyes, and his gaze slid away.
"Do not move."
Taita's voice was soft as the light breeze over the bright plain. By now, Bay, the Nubian, was so close that Nefer could see every charm in the necklace that dangled on his broad, bare chest. Bay stopped abruptly, and his scarified features creased into a frown as he turned his head, slowly questing all round, like a hunting dog with the scent of game in his nostrils.
"Still," Taita whispered, "he senses us."
Bay came on a few slow paces, then stopped again and held up his hand. The chariot pulled up behind him. The horses were restless and fidgeting. Hilto touched the dashboard with the shaft of the lance in his hand. A small rasping sound was magnified in the silence. Now Bay was staring directly into Nefer's face. Nefer tried to hold that dark, implacable stare without blinking, but his eyes watered with the strain. Bay reached up and clasped one of the charms on his necklace. Nefer realized it was the floating bone from the chest of a man-eating lion. Taita had one in his armory of talismans and magical charms. Bay began to chant softly in his deep, melodious African bass. Then he stamped one bare foot on the hard earth and spat in Nefer's direction.
"He is piercing my curtain," Taita said flatly.
Suddenly, Bay grinned and pointed directly at them with the lion charm in his fist. Behind him, Hilto shouted with astonishment and gaped at where Taita and Nefer were suddenly revealed, lying on the open ground only 100 cubits away.
"Prince Nefer, we have searched for you these 30 days past. Thank great Horus and Osiris we found you at last."
Nefer sighed and scrambled to his feet. And Hilto drove up, leapt out of the chariot and went down on one knee before him. He lifted the bronze skull helmet from his head and cried in a voice pitched to give commands on the battlefield,
"Pharaoh Tomoza is dead. Hail Pharaoh Nefer-Seti. May you live forever."
Seti was the prince's divine name, one of the 5 names of power that had been given him at birth long before his accession to the throne was assured. No one had been allowed to use the divine name until this moment, when he was first hailed as Pharaoh.
Pharaoh, mighty bull, we have come to bear you to the holy city that you may be risen in Thebes in your own divine image as Horus of gold.
What if I should choose not to go with you, Colonel Hilto?
Nefer asked. Hilto looked distressed.
With all love and loyalty, Pharaoh, it's the strictest order of the regent of Egypt that you be brought to Thebes.
I must obey that order, even at the risk of your displeasure.
Nefer glanced sideways at Taita and spoke from the side of his mouth.
What must I do?
We must go with them.